And a warm welcome to Monday's Richie Allen Show to you. How are you doing this Monday? Are you sunning yourself or yourselves? Are you? It's glorious here in Salford. What a couple of weeks we've had here in the UK. Back from holidays, delighted to be so as well. Do tweet me between now and the end of the programme. It's BBG Richie on Twitter. How are you doing, I said?
It's the BBG, not the BBC. You're listening to the Richie Allen Radio Show, live from Salford in Greater Manchester.
It's the Richie Allen Show, broadcasting live on richieallen.co.uk and multiple platforms around the world. And now, here's your host, Richie Allen.
I'll be joined this hour by none other than Rachel Elnaugh. Now, Rachel is famous for being one of the original dragons on the BBC TV programme Dragon's Den. Very successful entrepreneur, an author, and mentor, businesswoman, as I said. Rachel has been talking a lot about lockdown and about where we might be going with this pandemic and what we might do after it's all over. I got in touch with her and invited her on the programme. She's come on and will be on with me this afternoon. Lots to talk about with Rachel Elnaugh. And a bit later on then, just before I went on holiday, we talked quite a bit, so we did, about Pastor Artur Pavlovsky in Calgary in Alberta in Canada. He's the man that was celebrating the Feast of the Passover with his parishioners, I suppose, when he was invaded by Calgary police. He chased them out of the street church there and told them not to come back, called them Nazis, if I remember. He'll be on with me in hour two to talk about that and the fallout from that. So a busy Monday, April 19th, 2021. I've had a lovely old week off. Thank you for asking me. And I'm glad to be back. I'm refreshed, I'm revitalised, recuperated, and I'm grateful. Up in Ambleside we were. Might tell you a little bit about it in a moment. It was an interesting experience because we went up there on Monday the 12th when things reopened, kind of, here in the UK. Kind of half reopened. Might tell you more about it in a moment. Before I do that, though, just before I went, Jacob Christie got in touch with me and he said, Richie, do me a favour. Will you say hello to my mother's boyfriend, Glenn Christofferou? Say hello to mum's boyfriend, Glenn Christofferou, Jacob Christie. Thanks, Jacob. I've done that. And Philip Mills got in touch today and said, Richie, do wish a very happy birthday to my daughter, Emily Grace, who's 13 today. I've deduced she's 13 because he said she became a teenager today. And my obviously superior intellect worked it out. So happy birthday, Emily Grace. I did that dedication last year as well. So there you are, yeah. And I want to say hi to Steve from Stockport and his partner Sue, who are very active in activism. And Steve got in touch with me. I met him this morning. He came out to Salford to meet me. We spoke early this morning. Thanks for coming out, Steve. And I'll be in touch with you in the next couple of days, as I promised. And congratulations to Darren and the team behind The Light. Now, The Light is a newspaper, a free newspaper, which is doing very well. And I know that Steve in Stockport distributes the paper. Check it out at thelightpaper.co.uk. So yesterday morning then, chilling out I was in me jammies. I don't wear jammies, God, no. Commando, of course. And I was reading the Times and the Irish Times, the Sunday Times and the Sunday Times, and I saw this and I found it a bit interesting. Headline, you've probably seen it by now. COVID deaths data skewed by other illnesses, says Mayo coroner. Death figures reported by NPHET do not have a scientific basis, according to Patrick O'Connor, the coroner for Mayo. Now, NPHET is the National Public Health Emergency Team in Ireland. Okay, it's a branch of the Irish Health Service set up for COVID. He said that many of those recorded as having died from COVID-19 were already suffering with other underlying illnesses that may, in fact, have caused their deaths. Okay? O'Connor acts as a public information officer for the Coroner Society of Ireland, said that recording COVID-19 as the principal cause of death when a person was already terminally ill raised questions about the accuracy of the figures. One or two more seem to be putting their heads above the parapet, dear listener, aren't they? He went on to say, in reality, a lot of people have terminal cancer or multiple serious comorbidities. People can die from COVID or with COVID. I think numbers that are recorded as COVID deaths may be inaccurate and do not have a scientific basis. This is important now. Why is it important? Because when I was away last week, I couldn't help myself. On Monday, I read the Telegraph and I read the Times. And in the Telegraph, there was a story that I don't think was picked up by too many of the UK's broadcasters. But it was a story about how maybe one quarter of registered COVID deaths in the UK are wrong and shouldn't have been attributed to COVID. And this came from the Office for National Statistics here in the UK. And it said last Monday that 23% of coronavirus deaths registered are now people who have died with the virus rather than from an infection. This is hugely important, right? Okay, keep all of this in mind. So I was in Ambleside, Windermere, north of Windermere, a couple of miles north of Windermere, of Windermere town, that is. And yeah, there were masks everywhere outside. It was a bit depressing to see that. We had a great time anyway. We ignored it. A very strange incident. We were at Skelwith Bridge and we crossed the river to head up into the hills for a lovely walk, myself, herself and the puppy. And we were going about our business. Beautiful weather up there all week long. Absolutely glorious. And about 50 metres in front of us, we saw there were a couple approaching us. And as they got closer, it looked like it was a mum and her son. And would you believe it? As they got closer to us, both of them put masks on. They actually put masks on. Now, neither myself nor the oft-mentioned said a word. But obviously, when we'd moved on, we said, Jesus, what's going on with that, you know? Isn't that sad and strange and weird? But actually put masks on in the middle of the countryside, crossing a farm. I couldn't believe it. I couldn't Adam and Eve it, even. But there you are. But it was a lovely week up there. QR codes everywhere. So pretty much every business was open in Ambleside, those that serve food and coffees and beers, but they were doing all of this QR code nonsense. If you sat down, you needed to have the app on your phone, you needed to scan it to let the NHS know that you're in such and such a pub. Needless to say, we didn't get involved in any of that. Bit of high comedy for a Monday. We like high comedy on a Monday. Do you fancy a bit of high comedy on a Monday? Let's give you a bit of high comedy. You might have seen this by now because it's everywhere this afternoon. Keir Starmer, the leader of the Labour Party, was out sauntering around the city of Bath. He was sauntering around. Thirsty work now. Schmoozing is thirsty work anyway. So he decided he'd pop into the Raven for a pint. And the landlord at the Raven was, well, he was having none of it, was the landlord. And I'm going to play a couple of clips. You'll hear the landlord struggling with Keir Starmer's security man. And then you'll hear him aim a few choice words at the Labour leader himself. This is great, this.
That man is not allowed in my house. No, Lord. I'm not going to physically hurt him. That man. That's assault. I am not bothering you. I am not bothering him. That man is not allowed in my pub. Get out of my pub. Go on. Get out of my pub.
Calm down.
Thank you.
Yeah, so he left the pub, Starmer. Interesting, Starmer's security guy manhandled the landlord and kind of pushed him under the stairs, which is definitely common assault by any measure. So Starmer left the Labour leader. He's outside, a lot of bemused customers sitting around. And then the landlord followed him out and they exchanged a few words. And I think I can give you that clip now. They exchanged a couple of words. And the landlord, whose name is Rod Humphreys then explained why he was properly cheesed off with the Labour leader.
I've been a Labour voter my entire life,
You have failed to be the opposition. You have failed to ask where the lockdown was functioning.
There's a car just behind. Can we just...
Do you understand?
Can we go in?
Thousands of people have died because you have failed to do your job and ask the real questions. Well, I am telling you now, and I hope this goes out, you have failed this country.
Basically, that was it, and that's all of the audio we have. Kicked out of the Raven this afternoon, Keir Starmer. Yeah, let's keep the laughs going. Watching BBC News 24 this afternoon, Comedy Gold on BBC News 24 this afternoon, I don't mind telling you, Rita Chakrabarty is presenting, and she says that vaccine tourism might soon be all the rage. You probably know somebody who's gone to Eastern Europe to have their teeth done, because it's cheaper, apparently, in the Czech Republic to have your teeth done than it is here in the UK. If you want implants and stuff, I'll never have implants, me. If I had the money, I wouldn't have implants. But so that you get the dentist or the dental tourism. Well, vaccine tourism might become all the rage. Listen to this. This is not satire, and I'm not messing. I haven't made this up, and I haven't spliced together any clips. This is genuine from the BBC. Rita Chakrabarty presenting. Ah, jeez. We should be hearing Rita Chakrabarty right about now. That was a mistake there.
In Europe, the campaign to vaccinate against COVID-19 has been slow to take off, dogged by delays in supply. So, as the infection rate rises again across the continent, some people have begun looking abroad for a vaccine. Over the past week, that's brought the first vaccine tourists to Moscow, where around 50 people from Germany travelled for their first dose of the Russian jab, Sputnik V. Our correspondent Sarah Rainsford met up with the unusual tourists in Moscow.
Yes, let's meet the Germans. The Germans.
In life before COVID, Red Square was full of tourists. But Enno isn't just here for the perfect selfie spot. He's flown in from Germany to get vaccinated against the coronavirus.
Why? Why has Enno flown in from Germany to Moscow to get the jab? Why?
Oh, it's a pandemia. Yeah, so I saw all the zombie movies. I know how it ends.
You what now?
I saw all the zombie movies. I know how it ends.
Say again?
I saw all the zombie movies. I know how it ends.
It's a pandemia. You have to travel to get your vaccine. It's a pandemia. I saw all the zombie movies, so I know how it ends. If you're not vaccinated, says Eno or Enno, God love him. Anyway, little bit more. How far will he go for a jab, Enno?
Enno tells me the vaccine rollout at home is so slow, he was ready to go anywhere to get protected.
Anywhere to get protected.
Whatever the politics.
Not that I like to support the system or anything here, but I get a vaccination here and I don't get it in Germany. So, yeah, so at the end, the vaccination situation for me is better here, and that's really sad.
Russia is offering its Sputnik V jab. And the first vaccine tourists were almost falling over themselves to get a dose of it.
Excited, because now it's going to happen what doesn't happen in Germany.
Russia's big early claims for Sputnik made many in the West wary it was more a political tool than a pandemic beater. But Enno is confident the jab is as safe as any other.
How are you feeling?
Till now it's good, but I didn't get up yet.
It's good, but I didn't get up yet, says Enno, the German tourist in Moscow, who took a trip to get a vaccine. Very good. Yeah, I know. Why? Why did you do it? Why?
I saw all the zombie movies. I know how it ends.
I saw all the zombie movies. He's got to be related to Hayden Hewitt. There isn't a bigger zombie movie fan on planet Earth than Hayden Hewitt. Now, Angela is a Leicester City fan, and she was one of 4,000 fans who were at Wembley Stadium yesterday afternoon for the FA Cup semi-final against Southampton. Leicester played Southampton. Leicester won and will contest their first FA Cup final in more than 50 years. Or nearly. No, more than 50 years. That's right. So Angela had a lateral flow test 24 hours before the game and then told the BBC, Radio 5 Live, what it was like for her and how it went. Angela.
We had to show the proof of our lateral flow result.
And how did you do that? What kind of proof were you required to show?
So it was on our phone. So we got a text saying that our test was the negative and the date of when we'd done the lateral flow. So it had to be done at an official site rather than at home.
Right.
Yeah.
Okay. And so you get to the gate. What happens then? Any further checks or tests?
Yeah. So it was basically, I mean, yesterday's event was a bit strange because there were no club colours, but of course I am a Leicester City fan, so you kind of sneak in your blue colours, as it were, on your kit. But no, so it was really well done. So there were lots of people to help us as well and guide us, you know, what we had to do. Yeah, so it was just that check and, of course, our tickets and the usual, you know, the bag search and what you would have at normal
hand sanitizer match. Everywhere, presumably.
Oh, yeah, you can't not have a bit of hand sanitizer.
Presumably.
Yes, yeah, absolutely. Hand sanitizer everywhere.
Everywhere.
They had every other seat allocated and then a row in between, you know, people seated. So it was, you know, we were quite separated. I mean, it was quite funny that Devin and me, who live in the same household, had to sit
apart.
Yeah, we did. Yeah, so there was a seat.
She had to sit apart from her son.
Middle of us. It was quite funny.
And what about, did you wear masks? Were you allowed to sing?
Yes, we were singing, but it's a muffled thing. But yeah, we were singing.
It's a muffled thing. They were told that they had to wear masks inside the stadium.
Again, and everybody.
And the stadium is outdoors now. Don't think a football stadium like Wembley is an indoor thing. It's outdoors. It's a gigantic stadium that holds around 96,000 people. Outdoors, right? Right. And they all had to wear masks and sit apart from people that they presumably drove to London with.
But it was great. They were wearing their masks pretty much throughout. And they also had these passing rows clear. I think it was every five rows. So, you know, like when you're trying to get in and out, you would have to go by somebody. So here they'd kept, they called it a passing bay, I think, or passing, yeah, line. Which was wonderful. So it seemed like
wonderful.
Seemed like, and there were lots of people keeping an eye on, you know, people observing social distancing and all of that. And they were very particular about where we sat. And, you know, I could see somebody kind of just moved a seat, or actually me and Devin started sitting next to each other and they told us to move apart. But I think it's,
she sat next to her son and they came over, the marshals, and told them to move apart.
I think it's okay because it means
it's not okay, Angela.
We can keep vigilance on everybody's keeping their social distance.
It's a strange way, it's a strange atmosphere and environment to watch. I mean, even with the result going your way, did it feel a bit odd?
It did. I mean, the odd thing.
Of course, it felt a bit odd. I wonder, I mean, look, you can only speculate, really. My speculation, my opinion, that's a better word. My opinion is this stuff is meant to stay, I think. I think it's meant to stay. I think that's where it's meant to go. On this subject, Harvey Goldsmith, if you're as old as me, you'll know who he is. He's one of the most famous live music promoters in, at least in Britain anyway. But he's well known around the world as Harvey Goldsmith. He was heavily involved in Live Aid. He's promoted every major rock act you can think of. He was on Julia Hartley Brewer's programme this morning, and she put it to him, the presenter put it to him, that these tests, passing tests to get into venues, vaccine passports, these are gross invasions of privacy. He was having none of it. Here's Harvey Goldsmith, the promoter, speaking to Julia Hartley Brewer.
I find it very strange, the whole debate about vaccine passports or identification, because your phone, when you open your phone up, the people behind your phone, whether it's Apple, whether it's Facebook or Google or whatever, know more about you than you. So to talk about intrusion on privacy is absolute, total, complete nonsense. What we want to do is to be able to create an environment for people to go and enjoy themselves as best as they possibly can, where they know they're in a safe harbour. So if it means having tests beforehand or showing that you've got a vaccine passport, which is literally a tick on the box on the front of the NHS app, then so be it. It's not going to be there forever, but I have to have a yellow card, a yellow vaccine identification card in my passport because I do shows all over the world. Yeah. And in a number of countries, unless I show this yellow card at immigration, they won't let me in.
No, exactly. No, but that, but that's different. Travelling abroad, and again, for
not
me, it's
different. It is not different. No, it is, Harvey.
It is. Another country is allowed to decide who they allow in their country or not. That's entirely up to them. We don't have a say in that, but we do have a say in what happens in this country. And for me, it's not a privacy issue. It's a civil rights issue, which is that I don't think we should assume that unless people can prove that they are disease free, we should presume they are diseased and therefore shouldn't have access. Shouldn't it be sort of the other way around? I'm just saying, you think that this is the way forward, that if we have mass testing, you think that's doable and viable, even when you've got, say, a 50,000 capacity venue, getting in all those people with all the checks on their phones and someone's app not working, being turned away. I mean, do you think that actually, you know, the queues are going to be sort of round the block for 4 hours, aren't they?
That happens now, because when you enter into these events, you have to show either your ticket or on your mobile phone that you have a ticket. It's just exactly the same. It's no different. It's you're scanned in as you go in. You have to identify yourself. Our concerns previously are about people buying tickets on the secondary market or forged tickets or whatever. So we have to do the checks. It's absolutely no difference. It is no intrusion on privacy. All it says is you've had a vaccine, therefore you're going to be okay.
Yeah, nonsense, therefore you're going to be okay, he went on to say. 21 and a half minutes past five, the Richie Allen Show. How are you, by the way? Do let me know on Twitter. It's BBG Richie there. Rachel Elnaugh on this programme in a few minutes' time. You don't want to miss her. And in other news, the Prime Minister, Boris Johnson, will not be travelling to India next week. A planned visit has been cancelled over something called the double mutant strain of coronavirus. There's a double mutant strain. And later this afternoon, India has been put on the coronavirus red list for travel, meaning that if you do go to India, when you come back, you'll have to pay to isolate yourself in a hotel with security and all the rest of that. A lot of talk on telly today and radio about football and plans by the so-called Big Six clubs in England to break ranks from the Premier League and UEFA and FIFA and take part in some sort of an elite European Super League from 2023, I believe. I'm not going to get into that today. It is interesting and it is relevant, but I won't get into it today. What I'll do now is take a tune while I get Rachel Elnaugh on the programme. Don't forget either, a little bit later on, we're off to Calgary in Alberta. Pastor Artur Pavlovsky will be joining us, and I think he's got a lot to say, so he does. Music from Jamiroquai then will kick us off today on a glorious Monday afternoon here in Salford. Sunny Salford here. It's good to be back with you, so it is. BBG Richie, drop me a tweet. Cosmic Girl Rachel Elnaugh joins me in 3 minutes. Cosmic Girl, 25 minutes past 5 o'clock. Yeah, it's good to be back. A lot of tweets, by the way. To see what people are tweeting me, it's pretty straightforward. If you go to twitter.com and you put BBG Richie, all one word, in Twitter, press enter, you'll see what others are tweeting me. A lot of interest in Keir Starmer getting booted out of the Raven pub in Bath. Right, let's welcome our first guest to the programme today. I am a binge watcher of Dragon's Den. Love the programme. And I've been watching it since the very first series. So I'm a big fan, I have to say, of our first guest today. I really am. You, of course, will know her from that series, that excellent series, Dragon's Den. But she's also an author, successful entrepreneur, and you can find out all you need to know about her at her website, rachelelnaugh.com. Now, you were tweeting and emailing me for weeks and weeks and weeks because of videos that she was uploading to her YouTube channel, videos about coronavirus, with titles like The Great Coronavirus Swindle, Rachel Speaks Out, Lies, Damned Lies and Statistics. Very good videos, by the way, and very informative. very well briefed, which is important. Eventually we connected, and I'm delighted to say, live from the Peak District, where it's got to be gorgeous today, let's welcome to the programme the one and only Rachel Elnaugh. Rachel, welcome to the show. How are you?
Hi, Richie. Thanks for inviting me on. Yeah, I'm great. And it is beautiful up here in the Peak District. Blue skies, sunshine, amazing scenery.
There's nothing like it. You put a video on, well, you streamed the other day. I'm not great with time now, so it might have been last week, where you held up the phone and you did a bit of a panoramic kind of a thing. And I just thought, that's idyllic there. It's beautiful. When we lived in South Manchester, we used to travel for days out to the Peak District a lot, but not so much these days. But anyway, that's another story. You are very welcome. At what point last year can you remember this? If we say that this began in March of 2020, at what point, Rachel, did you think to yourself, something is not right here?
Yeah, well, interestingly, Richie, I did a video on that called For the Naysayers. And in that video, I explained the unfolding of my own journey from believing in the propaganda in the beginning and how that sort of unraveled for me. And I started to question, because I think it's important for people to understand that journey. So the first question mark was when someone sent me one of the SAGE notes, of minutes of the SAGE meeting, about how they needed to make everyone frightened. So that was like, and I thought it was a fake. I thought I didn't believe it could be true that there was this sort of body that was trying to manipulate fear. And then I started to get suspicious around what they were doing to small businesses, because that's my whole world, is entrepreneurs and small businesses, and going to small businesses and seeing what the government had forced them to do. Great little businesses, like in the Peak District, there's little tea rooms up here, really beautiful, quaint little tea rooms that had been transformed into this chaotic, hideous arrows, barriers, hand gels, masks. And I just like, what is going on? And then I got very triggered and when Boris announced the rule of six, because I have five sons. So basically that's my six. And it was just like, oh, my son can't have his girlfriend over now. And I actually I was so angry. I just went out and I did a sort of 25-minute rant out in the Peak District. It was totally unscripted. I didn't even mind map it. I was so angry. And I just basically poured out what I felt. And that video went viral and, of course, was then banned.
Was banned,
by Facebook and YouTube. I've just come off a second strike with YouTube because I was about to be deplatformed. And, it's just shocking what is going on. Shocking. And, of course, you know, when I did that first Rachel Speaks Out video, of course, you know, thousands of people then contacted me and I started to really research it, and I read The Great Reset, and then I realized, because I have been in the world of capitalism and I know how it works, and the penny dropped. Oh my God, this is a global corporate hostile takeover bid. That is what this is. And oh my goodness, it's actually very frightening.
Yeah, well, that would be, speaking to somebody like yourself, that would be the next logical comment from me. Not easy to realise that, not easy to accept it.
Well, understanding as I do capitalists, and we're not talking about entrepreneurs here, we're talking about big business capitalists, ruthless, because there is, when you get into that realm of big business, it's run by heartless, ruthless people. And it's clear to me that a very small group of capitalists have made a decision, a strategic decision, to take over the planet, to take over the world. And they have essentially bankrolled some of the key politicians, obviously Boris Johnson. Dominic Cummings has admitted it on a video that he was bankrolled by a billionaire Tory backer. Obviously, Justin Trudeau has been bankrolled by George Soros. Biden absolutely just a front man puppet for the elite. And of course, all they needed was just these key people in place to press the button. And it was almost like as soon as Boris Johnson got elected in, they pressed the button on the Great Reset. Literally, it was almost immediately pressed in December, mid-December, when he was elected. It was like, right, let's go.
You touched on something very interesting as well a moment ago when you talked about the rule of six and your five sons. And that is the arbitrary nature of what was happening at the time. Silly rules that seemed to be kind of made up on the hoof, basically. You know, it was changing every other day. You can do this and you can't do that. That was a big red flag for you, was it, that something isn't right here? Because obviously when these things were being announced, these diktats, you know, you can go here and you can't go there, no evidence was forthcoming, was it, Rachel, to support it?
Well, the thing is to realise what they're doing. What they are doing is creating dissonance. And when people are in that place of lower vibration of fear and dissonance, they are disempowered and easily triggered into fight flight. And it's very easy to control people when they're in that low vibrational space, which is why, from a personal point of view and in everything that I'm doing now, I'm really, really suggesting to people that we have to focus all our energy now on creating the world we do want rather than trying to fight the one that they're trying to create for us. I mean, obviously, I'm not saying don't protest, don't stand strong in our no, but we have to pour energy now into creating the world we do want. Super important. And it's super important to create local community groups. I've created a small local community support group where I live. I'm also creating an eco community, and we're acquiring some freehold land so that we can get our base needs covered: food, safety, security, energy, so that we can essentially, so that we're not reliant on big corporate, because this is really important, because that's how they're going to do it. They're going to use, they know they can't do it necessarily through governments. They're going to use the corporates to enforce these things. So big corporates are going to be the ones who dictate.
You think the private sector,
unless you've got the vaccine passport. You can't come on the plane unless you've got the vaccine passport.
Yeah, the private sector. A great friend of mine who's responsible for LiveLeak.com, one of the world's most visited websites, said to me a long time ago, it'll be the private sector or the corporate sector that will drive this stuff. Folks, we've got Rachel Elnaw on the programme. I know you know all about Rachel. Was a founding member, you could say, of the brilliant Dragon's Den series on the BBC, first couple of seasons. Rachel is an author as well. Do visit her website, rachelelnaw.com. I've put a link out to it already. Check her out and find her on YouTube while she's still there. I'm so glad you brought up moving beyond and what we can do, because that's so refreshing today. Coming back from a week's holiday, I thought to myself, do I want to be telling people again why this is wrong and that's wrong and why this is corrupt and that's corrupt? It's time to talk about solutions. So we'll spend the bulk of our time definitely talking about that. But I've got to ask you, Rachel, I wouldn't be doing my job if I didn't. The media tells us that we're crazy, wacky conspiracy theorists, that what the World Economic Forum and people like Klaus Schwab, what they're really trying to do is make the world a more sustainable place and a more equal place. They say the talk of changing the way we live and turning the world into an open air prison and, you know, basically stealing all of the world's wealth, that's just crazy stuff. That's what they say. Why, if you're right, okay, and obviously I'm sympathetic to your point of view, of course I am. If you're right, if I'm right, where's the media on this? Why hasn't anybody in the legacy media taking this on? Why?
Well, you only have to go to the World Economic Forum and look to see who the strategic partners are. So strategic partners in business, you have strategic partners. And just look at who the strategic partners of the World Economic Forum are. They are Reuters, Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation, AstraZeneca, Pfizer, Google, Facebook. So there are all the villains right there. Yeah. It's so obvious. It's so obvious what's going on. So Reuters, of course, the news agency, which is actually Canadian, Reuters is the feed for all of the mainstream media. So Reuters, and of course, all of these fact-checking bodies, they're all owned, they're all funded by Bill and Melinda Gates or funded by Facebook, Google. So essentially, they control big tech, they control big pharma, they control communications and media. And of course, the next stage is banking and finance. And that's the next thing that everyone's bracing themselves for, is that they are going to get into a position where they will pull the plug on money.
Well said. And can I just back that up by saying something that didn't surprise me today, but it did take my breath away. Didn't surprise me, but I did gasp when I saw it. I'm sure you saw this afternoon, Rachel. The BBC News website reported this afternoon, Bank of England to consider digital money plan. It's right there. I've been doing programmes like this since 2009, and researchers and authors from around the world have been warning about cashless society or the warning of a cashless society and what that would mean for liberty. So yeah, right there, issued by the bank for use by households and businesses, it's claimed it would exist alongside cash rather than replace it. But I don't believe that, do you?
I mean, you know, all through this, they have seeded everything they're going to do. They've seeded it. They've planted the seed in people's minds all the way through this. You know, last year they were already talking about the second wave back in, you know, May, June. So, of course, and then when the second wave comes, oh, everyone was ready for it. So they are seeding all the way through, you know, and this is never going away. Coronavirus is never going away. Now that they've moved it from COVID-19 into rebranded it coronavirus, which is basically just the common cold. This is going to come in waves. Every winter there's going to be, you know, double mutant strains and the new strain and the new booster jab. It's never going away. This is going to happen year after year after year until everyone has been mass vaccinated. And of course, there is the very strong risk that those jabs, I mean, I don't even want to call them vaccinations because they are experimental genetic engineering injections. There's a very, very real probability that this is a mass genocide program and that there will be thousands of people dying. And of course, they'll blame it on the new strain, the new killer strain that the jab didn't quite cover.
And, you know, can I just jump in there and say, in case you're expecting me to jump all over Rachel and demand that she provide some evidence to support the claim that it might be genocidal, it's important to remember that a number of very well-known epidemiologists have said as such, you know, and well-known scientists and molecular biologists. We've had them on this programme. People like Sacharit Bhakti, who's been on with me, Professor Dolores Cahill, who's been on. And those people have earned a right to have their opinion. So I can't say that Dolores Cahill is right. I can't say that Rachel is right, but it should be heard this, you know. These vaccines are unnecessary anyway. And Rachel, I was never any good at mathematics, but as a radio producer, I'm a pretty decent researcher. And it's very easy to find out, if you have a mind to find out, if you're of a mind to find out, that this virus, whatever it is or was, because it's, as far as I'm concerned, it's gone now anyway, it was never much of a threat to anybody, even by their own words. Hasn't Chris Whitty gone on the record two or three times in the last 12 months to say that basically most people won't get this? Of those who do get it, the majority of them won't even know they had it. Of the ones who do get symptoms, they'll be very mild. And of those, you might get a few that might need to go to hospital. It's by their own words, this is nothing to get worried about. And yet they're, as you said yourself earlier on, trying to coerce everybody in the country to have a vaccine. And before I forget, Rachel, let me go back to something you said a moment ago, because you talked about local groups and the Peak District. I'm fascinated by this. Are you finding, as time goes on, that more of your own neighbours and friends and people that you would meet, acquaintances, they're more interested now in hearing the alternative point of view as time goes on? Are you finding that?
Well, to be quite honest, Richie, I am focusing all of my energy on the people who realise what's going on. I don't think there's any point wasting energy trying to convince people who are absolutely in the programme. Because the brainwashing is so complete and so thorough, it's almost impossible to... And I just don't want to waste my energy arguing with people who just don't get it, because
they'll never get it. Maybe they'll never get it.
Yeah. Focus all of our energy just on those who do agree. And I think it's probably 20 to 25% realize that it's a scam.
Do you really think it's a scam? I'm really pleased to hear you say that, because if you'd asked me to venture a guess, Rachel, I would have said about 3%. I would have said, I'm glad if I'm wrong. I hope you're right so much, because, you know, coming back from the lakes to see a packed Ambleside and Windermere with nearly everybody we met wearing masks outside, it was very saddening, that, you know. I hope you're right. I hope it's nearly a quarter, because that's a great start.
Well, where I live in the Peak District, no one's wearing masks. I mean, out in the country, people walking their dogs, people just happily laughing, walking along. Very few people wearing masks. It's only when I go into the towns or the cities that you can feel the difference. You can feel the fear. And I think a lot of people are also just going along with the mask thing because they don't want confrontation. And most people who are wearing masks, if you notice, they're wearing them very half-heartedly, like underneath their nose or around their chin, or, you know, it's like they're just complying because they don't, for a quiet life, basically. But I don't think just because someone's wearing a mask that they agree for one second. And most people are only complying because they know they'll lose their jobs if they don't go along with it.
Yeah, that's a good point too. Not everybody wearing the mask. There's no guarantee that they're entirely with the programme. Rachel Elnaugh is live on the Richie Allen Show this afternoon, Monday's programme. Go to rachelelnaugh.com, find Rachel on YouTube. She's on Twitter as well. Founding member of the Great Dragon's Den on the BBC. Very successful entrepreneur and author. And it's good to have her on the programme this afternoon. I always feel guilty, Rachel, because I spent so much time in commercial radio. You know what you said about the genocide? I'm supposed to be hammering you. I really am. I'm supposed to be jumping all over it. But there's no rational reason to ask a nation to take this vaccine. They are mRNA experimental gene therapy drugs. They are, by their own admission. And some great minds have said that those who take these things are putting themselves at severe risk of pathogenic priming, they call it. I know you've heard about this. In the next year or 2 years, if they experience an ordinary coronavirus, it could cause their own immune systems to basically kill them. So I've got to accept that it's a real possibility. But we're going to talk about, speaking to you this morning, it's great to hear you say, look, I want to focus now on what those of us who understand is going on, what we can do going forward. Because I've been reading a lot today about two-tier societies. Fair play to some of the countries, Anglican bishops and priests and pastors. They've, as you know, written a letter to the government saying, I mean, this is basically tyranny. Don't do it. Two-tier society. You're telling me, and I'd want to put words in your mouth, that maybe that won't be a bad thing if we do the right things. Have I got you right?
Well, what I'm saying is I feel that we need to create an alternative to the one that they have planned for us. So an alternative economy, an alternative way of being, so that people have a choice. Because if we're right that there is going to be mass genocide, mass deaths, and those statistics are correct, then even if at the moment it's 20-25% of us and maybe 50% are going along with it merrily, having their jabs, which is kind of what they're saying. 50% of people have had the injection, right?
Yeah.
If those people all die, or a big chunk of them die, then suddenly the 20-25% becomes the majority. Do you get what I'm saying?
I do. It's bleak. It's horrible to consider it. But yeah, I hear you. Yeah,
it is horrible to consider it. But going back to this thing of evidence, it's really interesting when you look at the way that the World Economic Forum has sold this in, because they've obviously sold it in. I mean, I know the way the world of capitalism works, and marketing and sales and key messages. And how do you sell it in? The way they've sold it in is that we need to save the world, and we need to save the world because there's overpopulation. There's too many people on the planet. And if we don't do something about global population, then everyone's going to die. That's how they've sold it in. That's why they've got David Attenborough and, you know, Prince Charles and, you know, even Boris Johnson, Stanley Johnson. They've been very vocal that the world is overpopulated, and the UK population needs to reduce from 60 million to 15 million, Boris Johnson's father said in a famous interview. So if we're dealing with people who truly believe or are selling the idea that the world is overpopulated and something drastic needs to be done, otherwise it will be wiped, the human race will be wiped out, you can see how they're justifying this on a moral level, because I believe at some deep level, the people behind this who are evil at some level believe they are saving the planet. At some level, they believe that they are the saviors, the messiahs, the benevolent ones who are, this is like tough medicine, but it's for humanity's good, and it's the only way to save the world. I think that's the way that they've sold this in.
Is that because maybe subconsciously you want to give them a pass? Because on some subconscious level, you can't imagine that anybody could be that evil. You know, that they would want to, you know, bring in this technocratic lunatic asylum, this trans, this, you know, this post-human society. Transhumanism is obviously a big thing. And I'm not... Rich,
every dictator, like even Adolf Hitler, he truly believed he was doing the good thing for Germany.
Yeah.
He truly believed that he was saving Germany, didn't he?
Yeah, from the bankers. Yes. Yeah, he did.
So these psychopaths, sociopaths, it's like mass murderers, psychopaths, sociopaths, they all at some deep level believe that they are gods.
And that's
the twisted thing about it. And I think that we are dealing with sociopaths and psychopaths here, highly traumatized boys who've grown into men. And I just know this from the world of politics, having moved in the world of big business and politics. To get to the top in business and politics, you need to be hard-hearted. And that usually comes from having a hugely traumatic childhood, which hardens you to be able to do things which are ruthless, lacking in empathy, lacking in compassion, because you simply can't feel, if you've had a very traumatic childhood, you simply can't feel in the same way. You don't feel empathy, you don't feel, you're just ruthlessly determined to execute what you need to do.
At the expense of everything.
Yeah.
At the expense of everybody else. I read Joel Bakan's book years ago, they made a film of it, The Corporation, and he would agree with you. Ultimately, the corporation is a psychotic entity, and it ultimately doesn't do any good. This is really interesting stuff. Rachel Elnaugh is our guest this afternoon. She's in the Peak District. It's beautiful. It's beautiful here in sunny Salford. 10 minutes to the top of the hour. We've got Rachel for another 15 minutes. I hope you'll come back again to carry this on, because there's a lot to talk about around these subjects. On moving forward then, you said it might be the case that, you know, those of us who get this and understand it might become the majority or might be in a position where we have a little bit more sway or more power. Is it that point that you move then, or do you begin to move now, you know, in your own social groups, in your own neighbourhoods? What would you say to people, Rachel, who would say, I'm fascinated by this, Rachel, I think it's great. What do I do today? What can I do today with those that are already aware of this? If we just leave to one side for the moment, the cognitive dissonance, the ones who do not want to listen, where would you begin today?
So we have to create local groups. Lots of people are creating freedom cells, local community support groups, local people. Because obviously they're trying to drive everything online, and online has its place, but there's no substitute for having a small, even if it's just a dozen people locally that you know are on the same page, have your back, and you have that strength. And if we can form ourselves into small groups of people who have got local solidarity that can then connect with other groups. I mean, these stand in the park groups that are happening are great at the moment. I mean, and our little community support group has joined with the stand in the park group at Belper in Derbyshire, and we've, you know, doubled their numbers, you know. So it's like we're all then connecting, and we have to do it now, because there's going to come a point with this master plan where it's all going to break down. And it could be that they pull the money supply. It could be that there's mass death. And we need to be prepared well ahead of that to have this network in place, this support network that is super strong, and it's boots on the ground. It's people that you can call on, so that if, for example, they pull the plug on communications, which they could do, you know who your people are, that you know you've got your base needs covered locally. It's super important.
And even, I mean, somebody said to me recently, we might end up going back to the barter system. You know, I was in Tangiers some years ago. And we went south towards Fez, and we went a few places. We went through a couple of villages, and I was astonished in the 21st century, Rachel, to see people working together in a community, in a village, where everybody had a skill or a talent that would apply that skill or talent for the benefit of everybody else. And of course, in return, they would get something from their neighbours. I remember one guy was baking the breads for the day, and another guy was doing this. And somebody said to me recently, I wonder if we'll go down that route. Do you see something like that in the future?
Well, I do feel it's really important for us to get our base survival needs covered. And therefore, if you have a local support group, so you know there's someone that you can get your wood from, there's someone that you can get your vegetables from, or you can grow them yourself. So you've got your base needs covered. And that creates a feeling of safety and security, because we are going into potentially a massive meltdown situation where our very survival on this planet will be threatened. And if you have your base needs covered, then you won't collapse into fear, because you know that you can feed your family, you know you can stay warm, you know you can be safe, you know you've got a community. So whether that's just a local group of people, or whether you actually create your own eco community like we're doing, and we're buying a farm in the Peak District, which will be self-sufficient. So it's got its own water supply. We'll have our own food, our own energy supply, and it's very safe. And we'll have a community there that has got a cross range of skills. And that community can then link with other communities, so that we've got those base needs covered. And it's really, really important, because the future we're going into, I mean, I could be totally wrong on this, but my instinct tells me we are going into a very challenging few years, and they've pressed the button on this, they're going to bulldoze it through. They're going to keep bulldozing it through relentlessly. We're dealing with ruthless people here who will stop at nothing to complete on this plan. And so we need to be smarter And if we try and fight it, we only feed it. So we need to create the alternative and we need to act smart and not play into their hands. I truly believe that.
Yeah, I was asked recently, do I think there's any recovering the situation? And I said, honestly, I don't think so. So I've kind of made peace with that. And I've spent most of the last few months kind of wondering, what will it be like in the next few years? How will we do, you know, how will we live? What will life be like for us? There will be some dismay, I suppose, amongst our listeners tonight, listening to Rachel saying, ah, she's kind of given up. She's not given up. I'm in the same space, really. I don't think it can be stopped, at least not in the short term. I mean, it does drive me mad, you know, Rachel. Doing the monologue earlier on in the programme before you came on, I mean, all of the information is in the public domain. Everything that people need to see this as a hoax is there. You've even got the county coroner in Mayo in Ireland, who's a man who speaks for the coroners right across the country, a guy called O'Connor, came out and said, listen, this is nonsense. We're assigning people a COVID death that have not died of COVID. Last week when I went on holiday, there was the Office for National Statistics said at least a quarter of the UK COVID deaths should not have been given as COVID deaths. This is the thing that bugs me more than anything. You know, all the info is there for anybody. You do not have to be, you know, a skilled researcher. You just have to listen to their own words to realise it's complete nonsense. And yet they don't. They carry on with the masks. I know you said that many of them probably don't buy it and they're just going along to get along. And again, I hope that's right. But, you know, I've gone a long way around saying there that I'm with you. I think it's more or less done. They're going to have their way for a few years. And we have to kind of box clever. So I'm so glad that we've kind of gotten into that, because it's been a difficult year for radio producers, Rachel, I don't mind telling you, talking about how bad everything is. It's nice to hear positive solutions. So, I mean, you sound very optimistic and very positive about that, about the farm. Sounds like you're really looking forward to it.
Yeah, and I tell you, the thing that has really helped me, because I did get sucked into, you know, I did get sucked into that whole world of fighting it and getting obsessed with all the information. And since I've started focusing all my energy on positive solutions, it has really lifted my own energy and positivity. I only interface with people who are of a like mind, and there is such warmth, strength, great community spirit in those groups, and I can only see that growing and growing and growing, and that's why I'm pouring my energy into it. And my feeling is that, you see, the governments have been very clever, because of course they are all of these people, the police, the nurses, the doctors, the teachers, they're all on the payroll of the government, and all of those people know that if they speak out they are going to lose their jobs. But a pressure cooker has to be building, and there has to come a point where these world leaders lose their nerve. And it might not be the top people, but the next layer down, at some point people are going to lose their nerve, because there are so many people now literally baying for blood, calling for Nuremberg trials. And some people have said to me that like the only way is to surround Parliament and haul out all the MPs and basically murder them. I mean, I'm just like, and I don't get me wrong, Richie, I am not at all an advocate of any form of violence. We cannot go down that route.
Absolutely
this has
not.
To be done in a peaceful, peaceful way. But those people, they must be feeling vulnerable. Imagine if you were Bill Gates right now, the amount of security that you would need to feel safe right now.
Yeah, that level of animosity, that's a very good point. You talk about energy, and I'm very interested in energy as well. The animosity level that Gates, it must be having some effect on him. I would imagine so. You know, if millions of people directing angry thoughts and bad feelings towards somebody, you can't be doing them any good, Rachel.
Well, I mean, you know, he must be needing a lot of protection. And we saw what happened to he got the mud the pies in his face, didn't he?
Yeah, that's right.
That famous video.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, he must have massive security. right now, if you think about it.
And that's no way to live. It's a good point.
Man in the world.
Yeah, it's a great point you're making. I mean, that's no way to live either, is it? Who wants to live like that, where you can't pop out for a cup of coffee or you can't pop around the record shop without having a whole pile of hired goons with you?
Exactly.
It's not good.
They will be lynch mobbed, and I think it's going to get to that point. And I think if you're a politician or you're someone like Chris Whitty or Matt Hancock, I mean, I've seen videos of people going up to Chris Whitty. I mean, that has to be quite scary for those people because they are absolutely, it's going to get to that point where people will be baying for their blood, especially if there are mass deaths as a result of this. Can you imagine?
And again, on the mass deaths, this is not Rachel Elnor, the entrepreneur, saying this. There are some very credible academic men and women who are warning that the vaccines will lead to an enormous amount of deaths. Now,
yes.
I would say to any listener, you make your own mind up whether you believe them or not. You might come back and say, I don't like Sacharit Bhakti. I don't like Thomas Binder. I don't like Dolores Cahill. Fair enough. That's your own prerogative. But these people should be heard. And I tell as many people as I can that these esteemed scientists have warned about the dangers of these vaccines. Marie is listening to this in the west of Ireland. By the way, we've had hundreds of tweets. BBG Richie on Twitter. Rachel is on Twitter as well. You'll find her very quickly. Rachel Elnor. Now, Marie is in the west of Ireland. We're busy doing exactly what Rachel is saying, Richie, would you believe? Loads of people aware and planning for life after coronavirus on the west of Ireland. But we're keeping it a little bit under the radar right now, she says. Rachel, do us a favour. It'd be nice in the very near future for you to come back and do a kind of a question and answer thing. A lot of really good questions have come in on Twitter from listeners, and each one is a talking point of its own. It'd be nice in a few weeks if you came back. We do a longer, maybe do an hour maybe, and answer some of these questions if that was okay with you, because I've enjoyed having you on.
I'd love to, Richie. More than happy to do that. And just to let your listeners know that every fortnight on a Monday at 12 noon UK time, I do an open Zoom forum where anyone can sign up. It's completely free, and loads of amazing people come on that and share their views and, you know, what's going on. So that's a really wonderful forum. And the videos of that, the recordings of those sessions are on my YouTube channel as well for people. They give people great hope, and to know that there's like-minded people out there, ordinary people who can absolutely see through what's going on. And that really does give people a sense of hope and solidarity. So, yeah.
Really good, Rachel. Folks, if you haven't checked out Rachel's website or YouTube channel, do now. Later on, when I put the podcast on online, this is a live radio show, when I put the recording on iTunes and Spotify and everywhere else, in the notes there will be links to Rachel's channels, right? But I'll put them on Twitter as well.
And also, just to say, Richie,
go ahead.
My main thing is Telegram. Rachel Speaks Out on Telegram. That's the main place I am at the moment, on Telegram, because it's such a great channel, because it's total free speech.
No,
you know,
censorship. So. Yeah, I did notice you weren't tweeting so much, and I saw you had the Telegram account. I'll definitely put links out there. Thanks for giving us your time today, Rachel. I really appreciate it. Stay in touch with me and let's arrange another one of these in only a few weeks' time, and we'll do a Q&A. And we'll get lots of questions. We've had hundreds literally today through Facebook and through Twitter. Lovely to meet you, and thanks for doing what you're doing.
Fabulous. Thank you, Richie. Thank you.
Not at all. Wasn't that lovely? Rachel Elnor there. You'll know Rachel, of course, for being one of the founding members of Dragon's Den, a hugely successful and popular BBC television programme, which I don't miss. Rachel was involved in the first couple of seasons of That Very American of Me there. She's written successful books. She's spoken all over the world. She's been a mentor. And last year, she began to ask some very pertinent questions about COVID and the measures introduced to deal with so-called COVID-19. Lovely to meet her, and I will arrange that and get Rachel back on the programme real soon. It's exactly 5:30 past 6 o'clock. It is Monday, the 19th of April, 2021. It is nice to be back. Thanks for asking me. on Twitter. I'm delighted to be back after a nice break. If you're just joining the programme, we will be joined ourselves momentarily live from Calgary in Alberta in Canada by a very interesting gentleman, Pastor Artur Pawlowski. He's the man originally born in Poland, came to Canada, I think, in the early noughties. And we saw him. Sure, I'll tell you what, I'll play a bit of the audio. Tell you what I'll do now. He was celebrating the feast of the Passover with his congregation at the street church in Calgary earlier this month. And he was invaded, and I don't think that's too sensational a term. I think he was invaded by police officers there. He was absolutely enraged by the cheek of them. To burst in on a religious ceremony, people sitting and worshipping together. And he chased them out of his own church and called them Nazis. And we can hear just a little bit of it there now.
Please get out. Get out of this property. Immediately get out. Okay. Get out of this property. Okay. Immediately. Out. I don't want to hear anything. Out of this property. Immediately. I don't want to hear a word. Out. Out. Out of this property. Immediately until... You come back with a warrant. Out. Okay, out. 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 Out of this property. Immediately out. Immediately go out and don't come back. Don't, I don't want to talk to you. Not a word. Out of this property. Out of this property. Immediately out. I don't care what you have to say. Out. Out. Out of this property, you Nazis.
Strong stuff calling them Nazis. We'll be speaking on the other side of this by Morrissey with the pastor Artur Pawlowski. It's the Richie Allen Radio Show, live from sunny Salford this Monday. Morrissey, the more you ignore me then. Right, Morrissey there. Let's welcome to the programme my next guest. Let me tell you a little bit about him. You heard just before the music there, I played you a little bit of his confrontation with the police officers who invaded his church during the Feast of the Passover, celebrating the Feast of the Passover at the street church in Calgary, Alberta. Police officers rushed in. He was understandably angry and chased them out. It's a clip that has gone viral around the world. Millions and millions of people have seen it. Let's welcome to the programme, live from Calgary in Alberta, Pastor Artur Pawlowski. Pastor, welcome to the programme. How are you?
Good. Thank you for having me in.
I'm delighted that you've agreed to take the call and come on. Pastor, thank you so much. I've received dozens and dozens of messages today from people, Christians, who said that their heart lifted, their heart leapt when they saw you confronting and taking on those police officers a few weeks ago. Did you imagine for a minute that the clip would go so viral and be seen by tens of millions of people around the world?
No, of course I didn't. For me, what I did, and to this day, in my understanding, you know, my feelings are I did what every leader, every pastor, every business owner should be doing. Every politician, a good politician, should be doing, fending off the wolves, chasing out the hyenas, because that's what they were. They came to hurt. They didn't came to build up, to help, to make sure that we are healthy. They came to harass and intimidate. They broke number of criminal laws in the name of keeping a bylaw, which is just an infringement, like a parking lot, $100 ticket. And at the same time, those officers, they broke three criminal laws. I could charge them with 5 years jail time for what they have done. They were told not to enter. They were told not to harass people during the sermons, during the mass. They were told not to intimidate, take pictures of our parishioners, and they did it anyway. So I did what I believe every shepherd should be doing. That's why they have been carrying the sticks and the staff to fend off the wolves. So I would never imagine, if you would say that to me 5 minutes before that happened, that this video, and I've heard, was watched over 1 billion times. The highest watched video during that weekend on the planet Earth, I would say, oh, you're joking. But, you know, I received tens of thousands of emails and phone calls and people saying the same thing. Thank you for showing us how to do it.
Yeah.
Thank you for inspiring a movement. And I hope this will spread like a wildfire, that people will finally rise up and say, enough, it's enough. I mean, we are witnessing a repetition of history. Those people have absolutely no regard for our lives. They don't care if we live or die. They're destroying businesses. They're destroying our way of life, attacking our children, our families. And I hope that every man and every woman will rise up and say what I said to those devils entering the holy sanctuary: get out of my life, get out of my business, get out of my church. This is unacceptable. Even during the Middle Ages, you know, we say that there was a Dark Ages and, you know, there were the barbarians. So whatever we want to say about that time, knights could not enter a sanctuary, a church building, with their weapons. They had to leave their swords outside of the synagogue or cathedral. But here in the 21st century, nothing is holy anymore. Nothing. They entered like walking into a restaurant with their guns and handcuffs and tasers. I mean, wow, how low we have fallen.
It's shocking, really. And one of the things that struck me, I mean, I was blown away by the video, by the power of your voice, and by something I've known since I was a young boy, that when you stand up to bullies, more often than not, the bully turns and runs away. And I thought it was a beautiful illustration of that. And at the same time, I'm speaking to you now from the northwest of the UK, but I'm an Irishman, Pastor. I'm from Waterford City in Ireland. And I'm desperately disappointed that the clerics, the priests, the rabbis of the UK and of Ireland, they've backed down to this and they've allowed their churches to be closed. And I think, and maybe it's a bit strong, I think they've abandoned their flock. How disappointed are you to be a kind of a lone, I don't want to say warrior, but to be a lone soldier, a lone Christian soldier? Where are the other, you know, bishops and priests and rabbis? They seem to be missing.
You're absolutely right. I am very disappointed. I am saddened, because what is a shepherd? What is the job of a shepherd if not stand up for the flock, for the sheep that God has entrusted us? You know, we talk the good talk, right? We do the sermons and now the Zoom chats, and we talk about what the others have done during the last centuries, the heroes of faith, the apostles, the prophets, that some were murdered, burnt on, you know, stakes and chopped in half. And in Arabic nations, Muslims are chopping the heads of people because they refuse to deny Christ. But here we are living in a Western democracy and we are afraid to receive a ticket. I mean, shame on those pastors, shame on those priests, shame on those that claim to be shepherds of the people and have run away just because the boat is sinking, just like the rats would do. So my message to them is this: rise up, stand up, or give your position to somebody else, because obviously you're not worthy of the calling. You will be judged for your cowardice. The Bible says the cowardly and fearful will not inherit the kingdom of God. If you're not capable of standing up and fighting tyranny, then obviously you are not in the right field. Give it to somebody else that will rise up and stand up. I traveled throughout Ireland a few years ago, talking to pastors, talking to priests, trying to raise them up. I wanted to organize a nationwide march for Jesus. And I'm telling you, I had a warning for them: if you're not going to stand up now — and that was just a few years ago that I did the tour around Ireland — I said, if you're not going to stand up now, bad things are happening. And I was rejected and the message was rejected. So here we are today. We have a choice. We can bow to tyranny. But let me just remind something to you and to your listeners from history. Evil never stops. Evil will keep coming and hammering you. Evil is like a cancer, has to be cut out. It has to be stopped. If you think that because you're hiding behind your Zoom chats right now, that they're not going to come after you, you're delusional. History is teaching us they will come. They came for me. They will come for you as well. Rise up and stand up now while you still have. There is that window of opportunity that God has given it to us. And I hope that this video will spark such a fire internationally that thousands upon thousands of leaders will rise up and the politicians will join the movement, because we have elected them to serve us and to protect us, and they have turned to be traitors. They should be charged with treason. That's what they're doing right now. So we need a replacement, the replacement of the clergymen, replacement of the media, a replacement of the political arena and educational system. It has been taken over by very wicked, evil people. It's time for Christians to vote for real Christians, go into universities, become professors, media personalities, and take back their political arena. Because if we don't rise up now, I'm telling you, the history is teaching us that this is going to just get worse.
Just get worse. We've got Pastor Artur Pavlovsky live on the program from Calgary, Alberta. The video has been seen over a billion times. It's incredible. I think you have inspired people. I saw a video of a pub, a bar, I think it was New York, it might have been Florida, where people were enjoying a drink and some food, and some council guy came in to try and tell them what to do, that they needed to distance themselves, and he was chased out of the bar by the customers telling him to get out. I quite rightly too. I think you've inspired a lot of people. I want to take you back to something. I was watching you on Fox News about 2 weeks ago or 2.5 weeks ago, and you said, Pastor, you said to the presenter that you saw this coming and you could see the signs. And I know you were speaking the truth, because I've looked into you and you have been warning about this, and you described it earlier on. You call these people Nazis. How were you able to see this coming, and what exactly is happening? What sort of battle is playing out right now at the moment? Why is this situation happening to us right now at the moment, in your opinion?
Well, as you know, as you can tell by my accent, I grew up behind the Iron Curtain. I grew up under the boots of the Soviets in Poland. I have seen what communism and socialism is doing to a country. Completely destroys economy, completely destroys families. I mean, it's a disaster. I always refer to this like growing up in hell. People were depressed. They were drinking heavily. They had no hope. The 50,000 communists were like the rulers of old, and 36 million Poles were their slaves. It was the party line. Whatever the party said, that's what they went. Police could come into your house and 5 in the morning, break the door, beat you up, torture you, arrest you for no reason, just because you were listening to a wrong radio station, like Europe, for example. And then you would be taken to custody, face the judges that were corrupted. The constitution Poland had all this time, but no one respected it. It was lawlessness. It was what they wanted. It was what they said the play. And when I grew up, when, you know, growing up in a place like that, you know, emigrated to Poland, to Greece, and then to Canada, I can smell it coming from the miles. And we are being attacked by the same ideology. The enemy is not coming. The enemy is not within the gates. The enemy is already among us, and they're taking over. This is the greatest elimination of the middle class I have seen in history. Why the middle class? Because they are well-educated, well-traveled people. You cannot fool them. The elimination of the small and medium-sized businesses. They have been doing this from generation to generation. My grandfather had the business. My father had this business. Now I have this business. I'm going to pass it to my children. So they're hardworking people. They're patriots. They're lovers. They are family people. They're community people. They're good people, hardworking men. That's unacceptable for the communists and socialist fascists. They need to control you, and they cannot control small and medium-sized businesses. They cannot control churches, what is being said there, the education. This is the greatest fight for information we have ever seen on this planet Earth. Control of information, the fight for the truth. They need to eliminate censorship, deplatforming. You know why they're deplatforming people? Because they don't want you and others know what's really going on, just like during the Nazis. That's why I call them fascists and Nazis, because their tactics are identical, taking pictures of our families, stalking us. I have police and detectives coming to my home during the night hours to intimidate my children, my wife. They delivered tickets that are $100 tickets with two detectives and two armed police officers. Those are the tactics of fascists, Gestapo, KGB, exactly the same thing they were doing during that era. So that's why I call them for what they are. If you act like a fascist, if you act like a communist, I'll call you a fascist and communist. So stop acting like one. There is a law and order. There is a process. They could call me and they could say, hey, we want to come and visit your facility. Fine, sure, I got no problem. I'll open the doors, but not during the church service. That's unacceptable. Intimidating with your uniforms and guns, my parishioners, that's a no from me. And I would chase you every single time if you dare to come. They could come and, you know, make an appointment and talk to me some other time. No, they have chosen the tactics of the fascists. They're standing outside the church, taking pictures of women and children, just like the KGB did. If they could not get a guy, a man, they would send the pictures and say, hey, we know where your wife works. We know where your children go to school. Identical tactics. This is the greatest takeover by, a small number of people, the globalists, over the entire planet. And if we don't push back, if we don't stand up and fight now, and I'm not talking about guns and swords, I'm not talking about pillaging Antifa BLM style, no. I'm talking about 1981 solidarity movement, when the Poles finally had enough and they took it to the streets. And yes, tens of thousands died. Yes, some were murdered by the Soviets. But a year later, Poland got its freedom. The communists collapsed. The Iron Curtain was finally broken. The Berlin Wall fell down. This is a time for the people to rise up in big masses. We need a revolution, a spiritual revolution, of people that will realize what is going on and finally say, no, that's what it takes. It takes a bunch of people to say to those wannabe dictators, no, get out.
On the spiritual point you made there, where are we at a point, or have we arrived at a point in recent years where we've never been further away from spirituality or from the creator, whether that be God? Is that true? Had we kind of detached ourselves, and has that made it easier for those who pursue these agendas to advance? Is there some truth in that?
Of course it is, because when your life is all about you, money, prosperity, I want to have another house, I want to have another vacation, I want to have another good car, then when the government comes to you and threatens, your things, then you're terrified, you're scared, because that's your God. When they come to me, my God is the God, the creator of heavens and the earth, Jesus Christ of Nazareth. So I put my trust not in houses and cars and money. I put my trust in God. They're terrified of this. They are afraid of the real believers, because real believers are not going to do evil things. I don't steal, I don't cheat, I don't murder, I don't drink, I don't use drugs, I don't hurt people, I help people, because that's what my God is telling me to do. I love people because they have been created in the image of God. When you don't have that foundation, when you don't have those values, when the government comes and threatens your idol, your business, or your house, mortgage, your vacation, then you're terrified and you're bowing to the government because you want to keep what you have. And that's the problem. And they have been working on this for a long time. It's like the carrot and the stick all over again. They said, if you don't bow, I'm going to take the carrot away and I will use the stick. And that's exactly what is happening. You cannot enter into a business if you're not tested or vaccinated. You need passports right now in some countries to travel. Like, I mean, why, excuse me? Every year we have the flu, a seasonal flu, twice a year. And exactly the same time, suddenly there are spikes of this virus You know, in the city of Calgary, in the province of Alberta, do you know that last year we did not have even one case of flu?
Oh, yeah.
Miracle.
Miracle.
Miracle. The flu disappeared.
Praise God.
Disappeared.
Yeah.
We had less people dying in 2020 in the province of Alberta, where I live, than in 2019. So, excuse me, where is the deadly pandemic? Why are we shutting everything down? Because there is an agenda. And if people don't see it, it looks, you know, obviously they're blind and deaf and they don't want to see what's really going on because data doesn't lie. You just look in the city of Calgary, there was less hospitalization. And of course, we are in the middle of the deadliest pandemic ever. But there was less hospitalization in 2020 than in 2019 and 2018. The hospitals are empty. My mom went to a hospital for 2 weeks. She sent me videos. Empty, empty, empty. And yet the government officials are coming every single day telling people that the health system might be overwhelmed any second, any minute. We might end up with people in coffee shops with stretchers. Like, seriously.
Yeah.
That's what they're doing. They're using manipulation and lie. The same over... tactics that Minister of Propaganda Goebbels used for Adolf Hitler, and the same way the KGB was manipulating people, and they still do in communist countries. So wake up, look
around you
and see what's going on, because what's going on is not what they're telling us. In Canada, the government is shutting down everything. They want to do border patrols from province to province right now using soldiers. They have an agenda. They are submitting people like slaves, wear a mask. We know it doesn't work, but wear a mask nevertheless, because we tell you so. Be a good puppy, be a good dog, be a good slave, obey. And they say we're in this together, and they just gave themselves a big fat raise while the businesses are shut down in the city of Calgary. 10 to 15 businesses are dying, closing forever, every single day. They say to us, we're in this together, and they fly to Hawaii, Florida. They got mentions all over the world, those people, and they have get-togethers while I cannot go and see my parents. I cannot have a coffee with my brother, but I can go to mega stores with hundreds of other people, and I can have a coffee there. I can go to IKEA. I can go to Walmart, Safeway. I can go to Costco with thousands of people there congregating, but I cannot see my brother. Don't you see what's going on? The big corporations are profiting, and the small businesses and middle-class people are dying. That's what they want, extremely powerful and rich and extremely poor, because poor people are easy to control.
Why do so? Before I ask you this next question, and I'm mindful as well of your time because you're a busy man. I'm hoping you'll stay with me for another 10 minutes if you have the time, because this is very important. But I know you're a busy man. That's lovely. Thanks for that. We've got Pastor Artur Pavlovsky live on The Richie Allen Show Monday afternoon. It's in the AM, it's in the morning there in Calgary in Alberta. You know who Pastor Artur is now. He chased heavily armed police out of the street church in his town when they came in and interfered with and tried to break up the pastor and his congregation were worshipping over Easter. He ordered them out. It was fantastic. A billion people have seen the video, and we've been discussing that and also discussing what is happening. Why? I want to ask you about why people have turned away from Mass, from church, because I'm a lapsed Catholic. I used to go to church when I was younger. It was a big community thing. That's all changed. I'll ask you about that in a moment. But a very good friend of mine has asked a good question of you. Why does it seem that so few have seen through it? Why have so few people seen what you've seen and what I've seen? Why do you think that is?
I think the whole problem is hypocrisy. I think that majority of the so-called clergymen do not believe what they teach and preach. It's just a gig for them. It's just a career. Oh, I went to school. I got this. It pays well. I am well fed, and people are giving money, donations. It's awesome. So let's keep doing it as a career, as a job. You see, being a clergyman was never intended to be a job. It's a calling. You are willing to die for the people that you have been entrusted with. Hypocrisy, I believe, is the biggest problem in the church. People are seeing, especially young people, the hypocrisy of the church, the hypocrisy, the lie. You know, I have people coming to me and they say, well, if you believe in that book, the Bible, if you believe in God and you believe that he's more powerful, why did you shut down all your churches?
Yeah.
You see, even the atheists are seeing that the people are hypocrites. So who are you working for? For the government or for the King of Kings and the Lord of Lords, Jesus Christ, the one that raised people from the dead, the one that showed us how to live, to go out in the community, hang around with the sinners and heal the sick and give people hope, feed the poor. When was the last time the clergyman went out and fed the poor and talked to the prostitutes and gave people hope? They're hiding like kings in the castle, telling people to come to them, while Jesus went to the people, a totally opposite message, totally opposite foundation. So that's what's happening. Hypocrisy. Yeah.
I know you've got great empathy and love for homeless people. I'm very impressed with that. I've had some difficult times in my own life. I never had to spend a night on the streets, you know, thank God, but it's an issue that's kind of close to my heart. And I know you put your money where your mouth is, you know, when it comes to taking care of homeless people in your city. I want to endorse that. I think it's a fantastic thing. Pastor, when I was a youngish, you know, teenager, we would go to church on Sundays. The community would go and the churches would be full and people would congregate afterwards and they would speak to one another and they would share problems with one another. They would break bread. They would have food. We would play sports. There was a real community feel. And I don't think this agenda would get very far if things were the way they used to be. And I don't want to be, I certainly don't want to depress you or to be negative, but people have turned away from the church in great droves over the years, not just the Christian church, but they've turned away from Judaism, they've turned away from Islam in great numbers, the Abrahamic religions. Is that part of some agenda? Was something working? Was the system doing something to make that happen, in your opinion?
Oh, 100%. Indoctrination of the next generations. You know, Stalinism was very clever, and Hitler used it, Hitlerjugend, as you remember the kids for Adolf Hitler, indoctrination. Our universities have been completely taken over by liberalism, by anti-Christian sentiment, anti-Judeo-Christian values. It's all about, money. It's all about career. It's who is stronger wins. They are indoctrinating people, telling them lies. They're not teaching history. So the kids are coming out of the school thinking that they are the kings, and if they are strong, they can walk on top of other people's shoulders to achieve something. And they're doing this, they're proceeding with a plan, only to realize that they're empty, even though they have a great career and they got lots of money and they got some titles, but in the end they have nothing. They're miserable, they're drinking, they have no hope and no peace, no joy, a real joy in their heart. So they have been working on this for decades. This is not, it didn't happen overnight. They have been indoctrinating the past generations, removing them from families, removing them from churches. And unfortunately, the church didn't help because of hypocrisy. So we as a church, we were easy target because of the leaders that were not true shepherds. The people were not willing to pay the price. Right now, what is happening, it's the greatest reset in the church, a reformation or purification, if you will. I think that out of the ashes, God is going to build an amazing church. But those fake leaders, the fake pastors, the fake priests, are not going to make it. They're going to be bypassed because they have proven to be traitors, turncoats. They have sold their faith in Jesus Christ for a bowl of soup just because the government told them to do it. Out of the ashes, I believe that many, many amazing people, true lovers of humanity, true lovers of God, are going to rise up and they're going to shine. And the difference will be shocking, because what is the church if not a place where people can find refuge and hope? What is the church if not a people, a bunch of people going to the community and feeding the poor and telling them, we are not only saying we love you, we're going to prove it to you. We're going to show it in action. The book of Acts is a book of action. It's not a book of great talk. Talk is cheap. The church has to go back to the basics and continue in a book of action and go to the neighborhood, go to the community and be relevant. Church has become irrelevant in our 21st century. People look at the church and they say, why do I need to go and listen to a guy and then pay for it? I don't want to go and listen to a guy and pay for it. I want to see something real. That's why the young people are joining all kinds of crazy clubs, because they want a challenge. They want to do something. They just don't want to just sit in a pew. Where are our leaders in the churches are leading us? Leader, by definition, is a person that leads me somewhere. Where do they lead me? To a pew? And you tell that to the young generation and say, okay, I'm leading you to a pew. Sit tight and enjoy the ride for the next 60 years. No, sorry. I want to achieve something. I want to do something. Give me the high heels that I can go and conquer. Young David comes in and he sees this type of hypocrisy, and he sees the giants laughing at God, at his God, and at the army. And he says, who is this uncircumcised Philistine that should defy the armies of the living God? And he goes and fights, because that's what the young people want. They want to give them a challenge. Give them the high heel. Give them the giants to fight. In my church, I have a lot of young people, and I take them to the streets, and they feed the poor. I take them to the rallies, freedom rallies. Yeah, there is a risk of being attacked. Yes, there is a risk of being punched. Yes, there is a risk of getting tickets. So what? We'll fight the tickets. We'll fight the giants. We'll fight the corruption, and we'll do it together. So that's what the leader does, not just sends the troops like our politicians that never go to a war zone. They send the young kids to die. No, you're going to show us the way. I lead the people. I go where I am sending them. I lead them and I show them how it's done, how you feed the poor, how you preach the gospel, how you preach a political message, how you attack corruption. And when they see me doing it in front of them, in front of the cameras, they get courage. So I have a church. I'm a very privileged man. I have a church filled with warriors and fighters, lions. You see, when you hang around with a lion, you act like a lion. When you hang around with a traitor, turncoat, you know, when you hang around with hyenas, sooner or later, you're going to look, smell, and act like a hyena. So I say to people, be lions. You have been called to win. The church should be the head, never the tail. We should be the pack of lions going and roaring for the truth, for righteousness, for freedom, for humanity, for the truth of our God.
I'm not going to attempt to follow that. Thanks for coming on the program today, Pastor. I hope you'll accept an invitation to come back on again in the future. It was fascinating listening to you this afternoon, and it's gone down very well with our listeners. Lots and lots of comments on that. Godspeed to you, sir, and thanks for doing what you've done.
Thank you, sir. Thank you very much. God bless you and rise up, stand up.
Thank you very much. That was Pastor Artur Pavlovsky, live from Calgary in Alberta in Canada there. He's the man with the viral video. He filmed himself chasing nearly a dozen police officers out of his church over Easter when they'd stormed the church armed to the teeth to harass the congregation there and threaten them with fines to do with social distancing and all of that. It's been watched by, as he says, more than a billion people since then. I'll invite him back again in the future. It's 17 and a half minutes to the top of the hour. This is Monday's Richie Allen Show. It's time for a tune. And this is kind of apt. It's Bruce Springsteen and the Power of Prayer on Monday's Richie Allen Show. The Power of Prayer from Bruce Springsteen. The album is Letter to You. Chris says on Twitter, this is Bruce Springsteen's best album? ? No, it's not, Chris, but, well, in my humble opinion, it's the best album released by Bruce in a long time. It's a wonderful album. in fact. But no, it's not better than the wild, the innocent and the East Street Shuffle. It's not better. And greetings from Asbury Park, of course not. We're Born to Run, but it's a great album. It really is. Thanks for your tweets there during the conversation with the pastor. He's just texted me back to say he'd be delighted to come back on again right soon. A number of you are talking about vaccine concerts. And I have to say, I didn't notice this over the weekend, but the Irish Independent ran a story that suggested that Bob Geldof, the scruffiest, mangiest, dirtiest bastard that ever trod the holy ground of Ireland, apparently he's offered his services to raise money for vaccines. Yeah, please, God, no. But yeah, I did see that. I didn't see it, I should say. A number of you tweeted it to me today. Thanks for that. That's what I needed. Hi to Alan in Liverpool. How you doing, Alan? And to Andrea, who says, God bless the pastor, Artur, speaking up for the gospel and the good news and truth. It is for freedom that Christ has set us free, says Andrea. And I'm not stupid, me. I know I'm not the brightest spark in the box, but I'm not dumb either. And I am aware of the fact I've been doing this particular programme since 2014. And I know that a lot of spiritual people listen. And I know that a lot of people who worship listen to this programme. And it kind of touches me that, because I've obviously said before, you know, that I'm an atheist. I don't necessarily believe in God. And then I downgraded myself from an atheist to, I self-identified then as agnostic, which is probably more honest. And I do really appreciate your tolerance, I suppose, because so many of you do have faith in a creator, you know, and I respect that, because I don't know anything about anything. I really don't. I know less now than I did last year and the year before that. Brian Murphy said the pastor is some man for one man. Chloe said amazing inspiration. Great guests is Mark Richards. And there's been dozens of tweets as well about Rachel Elnor, and you can find Rachel on Twitter and on YouTube, so do check her out. Elizabeth says, Artur, Pastor Artur, is a true inspiration. Tears to eyes moments. Thanks, she says. Martin was listening to that as well. He's very enamoured of what he heard from the pastor there. William Henderson in Scotland. How you doing, William? And I want to acknowledge my friend Phil Restino in Florida, who's a lovely gentleman, former guest on the programme. And he was listening with great interest to the man, as he says, Phil says, chased the Nazis out of the church. Look, it's a bit hard. And maybe I should have said it to him. Maybe I should have said it to him. Maybe it's not the right thing to call the officers Nazis, you know. Many of them, if you look at the video, are young men and women, probably not long on the job. I'm being the devil's advocate here now. But you've got to give people time as well, you know, to wake up to what's going on. In fairness to the police, they didn't tase him. They didn't draw their guns on him. They didn't arrest him or try to arrest him. They just backed off, to give them their credit. But he did say, didn't he, that he's had a bit of blowback or a bit of pushback since then. His house has been visited late at night, and they've been photographing members of the congregation. He did say that as well, which is not nice to hear at all. Okay, we scroll on down because a lot of tweets came in. Hi to Ollie's granddad. How you doing, Ollie's granddad? Hi to Wayne Smith. How you doing, Wayne? To Simon Brock. How you doing, Simon? Lovely stuff. I've not got anybody booked in this week, apart from today. I've basically hit the ground running, or I did hit the ground running this morning when I came back from my holiday, but I do expect we'll be hearing from some very interesting people as the week does go on. Okay? Okay. Zhu says to me, Richie, I noticed that the Eastern Europeans in the UK are much more aware of the terror and fascism coming down the line, maybe due to their history. I am the sole unvaccinated Brit at work. Only other care staff I know who have refused it are from Poland, Romania and the ex-USSR states, says Zhu. Thanks so much for that. I used to find on my travels over the years, and I've got to put some WD-40 on my chair, don't I? I did, actually. Do you hear it there squeaking? Do you hear it there in the background there? This is ASMR stuff now, isn't it? I'll start clicking my fingernails together really soon. This ASMR stuff, which is all the rage. I've got to get some WD-40 to the chair. But my experience has been before... I mean, I don't get too many taxis now, obviously. There's nowhere to go. Isn't any place to go. There's no concerts to attend. There's no foosball to go and watch. So I've not taken a taxi since before the lockdown. That's true to say. But my previous experiences of taxis, often driven by people of colour, and quite often driven by people, in my experience anyway, of South Manchester, quite often driven by Pakistani gentlemen, or what you would call second generation, third generation Pakistani men. And I always found in conversation with them that they were fairly clued in. You know, the things weren't right, even before this. You know, false flag terrorism, stuff like that. That's been my experience. But I'm not, you know, remotely surprised to learn that Eastern Europeans, with their own checkered past and their understanding of communism. I wasn't going to get into an argument with Pastor Artur about socialism, because the socialism that he and his family believe they experienced in Eastern Europe is nothing like Bolivarian socialism, the socialism of Hugo Chavez, the socialism of, you know who my heroes are. It's a different thing entirely. There's no point in me getting into a protracted discussion about the definition of socialism with him. I know where he's coming from on that. And I'm, you know, you've got to be a bit humble as well. These are labels, you know. These are labels, you know, ultimately. And William is making a point about labels on Twitter. 6.5 minutes to the top of the hour. Interesting stuff sent to me all the time by Spiro Skouras on the vaccination programme, on vaccination injuries and much more besides. Do check out Spiro on YouTube on his own channel, and you'll find him on activistpost.com as well. I will be inviting him back on the programme right soon, because he's always interesting, isn't he? And he's always got something, he always brings something new to the programme. A quick run down the headlines before I take my leave of you this fine Monday evening here in Salford. I've not followed the Derek Chauvin murder trial. I've not followed it. I know that you have a variety of opinions on it. I know that some of you don't believe the thing was even real to begin with, and I accept you have your right to your point of view. But I don't necessarily agree with you. But I understand why you think like that. So don't fall out with me now. I'm entitled to my opinion as well. But the both sides, both legal teams, have been giving their closing arguments this afternoon. It's finally over, nearly, or it's nearly over. And it'll be the jury will then retire and will come back, I suppose, maybe not soon. Maybe not soon, with a verdict. With say it, don't spray it, Richie. So they've been given their closing arguments. I've not followed it because I don't deem it to be relevant. I really don't. I did see something funny on an Irish news Facebook page today, and apparently Africans living in West Dublin. Now, I was very amused by this, and I wasn't amused by it because I'm xenophobic or because I'm a racist. It just made me laugh because we are living in vaudevillian times. Apparently, West Africans living in Dublin, or Africans living in West Dublin, I can't remember, they've been marching in support of Black Lives Matter, and they've been complaining about their own treatment at the hands of the Irish Garda Síochána. And I just belly laughed when I saw that. I belly laughed. And then I felt bad for belly laughing at it. Because maybe the Irish Gardaí take a dim view of African immigrants in Ireland. Maybe they do, maybe they don't. I don't know. But I just thought it was funny. Because my experience of African immigration in Ireland especially as a radio producer and presenter in Ireland in the late 90s, early noughties, was that basically the Irish government rolled out the red carpet for our African brothers and sisters and gave them everything and anything they could find to give them at the expense of Irish people. I don't care if some people don't like me saying that. It's the truth. It's the whole truth and nothing but the truth. So I found that kind of amusing. But anyway, the things that amuse me, you know, you wouldn't spray paint on an underpass. Right, I'm pretty much done for Monday. Thanks for listening to me. Thanks for staying with me. Good to be back, as I said already. No need to repeat that. Back tomorrow at 5 UK time and Wednesday, Thursday as usual. And Sunday morning Melodies resumes this coming Sunday morning at 10 o'clock UK time. I know I did give a hint before I went on holiday that I would begin yesterday, but there was no need to do that. I needed my break. It rejuvenated and reinvigorated me. There was no need for any radio show yesterday. So that's back this coming Sunday, the 25th then. I'm sure you'll join me for it. Going out of today's programme was a little bit of Glenn Campbell. Before I do that, thank you so much to my guests, Rachel Elnor, and to Pastor Artur Pavlovsky. I can't believe I got through the programme without butchering the pastor's surname. It's a good start to the week. Glenn Campbell closing out the programme. See you tomorrow at 5 then. Bye for now. It'll be on all the usual channels. The podcast right soon. Bye now. It's knowing that you're